Welcome to Tumor Board with Hilario and Anish. I'm your co-host, Anish.
And I'm Hilario.
This week on Tumor Board, we talk to Drs. Adriana Masters and Claire Baniel. Dr. Masters is on faculty and the program director of the Radiation Oncology Department at the University of Louisville. And Dr. Claire Baniel is a PGY3 radiation oncology resident at Stanford. They're also members of the Society of Women in Radiation Oncology.
And as you'll be hearing from this episode, we discussed their editorial on medical family leave for residents and fellows. And we also talk about how these policies have evolved, the number of weeks residents may be able to take for leave, and how these changes may affect even family planning. And here's our discussion with Dr. Masters and Baniel.
So Dr. Masters, Claire, welcome to Tumor Board. We're excited to have you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, you know, we're both really glad you're able to join us for a conversation on this very important topic of leave during training, residency. Claire, you know, I reached out to you because the editorial you wrote about the current policies really resonated with me and reflected some of the conversations that Hilario and I have had on our own. And I know you and Dr. Masters have both been a part of the Society of Women in Radiation Oncology, and this has kind of been up their alley as well. But before we kind of do a deep dive into kind of what you wrote about and what you found, let me just ask you both, you know, how did you both meet and how did you become interested in these topics?
Dr. Masters, if you want to go first.
Sure. So we both met through SWORO, which is the Society for Women in Radiation Oncology. It's been around for about 5 years, and I was lucky enough to be one of the founding members and still serve on the Senior Advisory Committee.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I, as Dr. Masters mentioned, we met through Society for Women in Radiation Oncology. I served as the Physician Advocacy Chair for the past year, and something that's been really important to our organization has been advancement of policies that support training in multiple different aspects, but parental leave in specific, just with these ACGME and ABR policy changes this year, has really been a topic of importance to us at SWORO. So lucky to have mentorship from people like Dr. Masters and the rest of the committee to help, you know, support publications like this and get the word out.
It's been a topic for SWORO for quite some time. In 2018, came out the first publication that was a survey assessing needs for women specifically in radiation oncology and what some of those barriers to resident life were, such as adequate leave policies. And so multiple different surveys and different publications have kind of led up to, thankfully, some policy changes and a great supporting document by SWORO.
Yeah. So thank you guys for coming. I guess before we maybe get into some of the specific questions about, like, you know, family leave and medical leave, we had a recent conversation with Dr. Anna Lee over at MD Anderson regarding like fertility issues, especially among our female oncologists. But during that conversation, I guess like, we had a lot about SWORO, we had a lot about ACGME, we had a lot about ABR. Yeah. And so I kind of like, you know, putting into context who is responsible for making some of these policies and who has like the power to really drive these changes. Is like SWORO, ACGME, ABR, what is the interplay there?
I'll let Claire take that one. She's done most of the investigation and did a lot of the writing research for that.
Thanks, guys. You bring up a couple of really important groups, and I think it's really a joint effort from a lot of organizations that oversee different aspects of radiation oncology training, as well as certification for board eligibility. So for people who are listening that might not know, ACGME stands for the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education. This is essentially the governing body that oversees and puts out residency training requirements. So they set forth guidelines that accredited programs must adhere to in order to be in good standing and graduate residents in radiation oncology. So that's what ACGME is. And then separately, the ABR is the American Board of Radiology. And this is the group that oversees the initial board certification process for radiation oncologists, as well as radiologists. And then subsequent recertification. So they kind of focus more so on the board examinations versus the ACGME really oversees radiation oncology residency training program requirements. So both are kind of separate with their own roles, but as we'll discuss today, there's an interplay between both of these organizations when we think about what makes a certified radiation oncologist at the end of the day.
Yeah. ACGME sets requirements and rules that are standardized across all ACGME accredited residencies and fellowships. And so a lot of that is standardized in general across different training programs and specialties. But the ABR is specifically the one that licenses radiation oncology, radiology, interventional radiology, things like that.
Gotcha. Okay. So is it correct to say that when it comes to policy work, like say medical leave or paternity leave policies, ACGME is really the major body in there driving this kind of issues?
I think it's hard to say that it's one versus the other because right. in order to, right. you know, it's tough. It's a great and very valid question. I think you know, ACGME, of course, is going to set forth training requirements while you're going through residency, milestones that must be met, you know, guidelines for program directors for their programs to be in good standing. So with that, I think parental leave policies, you know, ACGME has a voice in this because there are certain milestones that trainees must meet. But on the flip side, at the end of it, we all want to pass our board exams, right? So the ABR also sets forth guidelines about what needs to be done prior to actually being able to sit for your exam. So they're very closely related, but a little bit separate where both are important in this discussion.
Yeah, I think because there's a specialty board like ABR, they have to meet the minimum set requirements from ACGME is my understanding. So like every specialty training program has to have a minimum amount of leave. And different specialties can set additional standards or milestones to sit for your boards or to be in good standing, be able to be board certified.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So let's talk about the evolution of this policy, specifically family leave, parental leave, or medical leave, right? It seems that obviously they have changed over time, probably towards good than bad. And would you agree that, I guess, like the emphasis of the older policies was more on like how much training residents or trainees can get rather than their wellness or like things outside of just the education? Do you feel like, I feel like that's kind of where it started from. Would you agree with that?
Like, I think like some standards were set for decades and decades. And so an entire giant organization's policy with people that have been in charge of it for many decades is going to be difficult to do. So I think too, we have to give them a little bit of credit in that they have like eventually tried to shift some of them and have made some changes and have addressed that there were some needs that were unmet. Or not that was intentional that they didn't care about our wellness. I'm not going to say that. but I think that overall having these conversations, making it very apparent, is something that trainees, that physicians, that everyone should be talking about and really addressing, I think is very important. And that needs to be something that we as a culture overall, hopefully, will shift more to because everyone has things that happen in their family, whether it's parental or family leave or medical illness for themselves or their loved ones. There are all kinds of reasons that training could be interrupted or could be paused and will need to be.
Right.
I think looking back at the older policies, you know, it's easy to have hindsight, like you said. And I think a lot of these topics about physician wellness and burnout, even though it's been present for, you know, decades, has really come to light during the COVID pandemic and presents an opportunity for us to reassess our policies. Looking back at older policies, I think the one trend that you can note is that training requirements seem to be more time-based. You know, when we talk about milestones that must be met. Oops, there goes my light. historically, you know, more time-based requirements. And there's really been a push within the last two decades or so to move toward competency-based training requirements for residency programs. And that just inherently, I think, does support more flexibility and kind of how we're defining a clinically competent radiation oncologist, which has the benefits of accommodating things like family and medical leave, as long as we're training adequate physicians. So I think that's probably like the overall trend in how things have been moving.
Gotcha.
The very quick version.
Right. And so like when it comes to say implementation, right? So these policies were set, you know, and depending on the nature of these policies, did you think there was a lot more discretion left to the program to decide how those policies were fleshed out, or versus like, you know, is it mandated that this, this, and this is what you should do? Like, so they don't leave anything to the discretion so much of the program. Is that, would you say that's the difference between maybe like more recent policies versus like previously?
I think Claire was very astute in the way that she described the change in the way that we evaluate adequate residency training over time. They just redid the milestones for mid-yearly evaluations to be more geared towards what do you actually need to be able to competently do. And again, that with there's been this response, I think, in the physician community in general, that we need a little bit more acceptance of some flexibility in terms of, you know, does it matter if you were here for 10 hours visibly, or does it matter that you learned something while you're here? Kind of a little bit different pace, but I think it is always helpful in terms of setting up policy for minimum standard requirements for something that's not used necessarily by each individual resident to allow that to be more acceptable within every program that you should be able to access family leave rather than, oh, you're an anomaly, which is easy to do if there's not a set.
So, Claire, you mentioned that the COVID, the pandemic really brought to light some of these issues that, you know, we maybe haven't so much talked about. Was that the only catalyst behind some of the recent changes that we've seen in these policies?
So I think it's maybe one of the catalysts for it becoming more normalized and like mainstream of a topic, but most definitely this work is the byproduct of years and years of leaders in our field who've been moving toward these policy changes, and advocates who, you know, now are full professors that started this work as residents even. So I think COVID maybe was a catalyst, like you say, but I know I would say this is definitely, you know, years long with, you know, founders of Saguaro and key members of Astro and other organizations that have, you know, really initiated this from a leadership level across our organization, which I think, you know, brings up another kind of important point that one thing that is a priority within our field is both recruiting and maintaining a diverse workforce. And I think as we see leadership look differently across radiation oncology, I think it's no coincidence that we're seeing a lot of these topics become priorities for our field. So, yeah, it's really exciting. I think we're all standing on the shoulders of giants to some degree.
Right.
Jaxie and Dr. Barry, who are some of our first faculty advisors for Saguaro, have been very earnestly fighting for these types of issues for many, many years because of its importance both to us as individuals and specialty as a whole, and its importance to our patients.
Right.
For sure. So let's talk about some of those changes you're able to find and that are going to be implemented. And, you know, you wrote about them in your editorial, Claire, and it's, I just want to read the title, Reflection on the 2021 ACGME and ABR Family Medical Leave of Absence Policies, an Opportunity to Increase Structural Support for Physicians. So long, but very clear title. So let's just like define, you know, what is a scenario in which a resident may want to take absence? What is eligible in these policies?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the ACGME specifies that residents are, and fellows, I should say, because it's not just radiation oncology that's impacted by these changes, but they're able to take, you know, up to six, or a minimum, I should say, of 6 weeks approved medical, parental, or caregiver leave within ACGME's policy. And then separately, ABR also provides some guidance in terms of what qualifies for this. So they're a little bit more specific in their detail, and they talk about time off or leave of absences, but they discuss things like bereavement leave, parental leave, caregiver leave, medical leave, as mentioned. They even leave flexibility up to each individual program director. So though those are kind of the big bins that leave can fall within, there is some flexibility, at least with the ABR, as far as what could qualify as a eligible leave of absence.
So when you say they leave some flexibility for program directors, like what is some of that that programs can be flexible for? Like, is it the number of weeks at consecutively that someone can take leave, or is it the overall number of weeks? They gave like a range.
Yeah, so the policy isn't specific. ACGME talks about, you know, being able to take a leave of absence that is a minimum of 6 weeks that's financially supported by the institution. The ABR provides kind of a ceiling for the requirements time-wise that must be met in order to sit for initial board eligibility. So they discuss in their policy an average of 8 weeks that can be taken per year over the course of 4 years. Noting that that's inclusive of things like vacation time or other time off. So sort of when you look at it over the span of a four-year radiation oncology residency program, that amounts to 32 weeks maximum total between vacation, between a leave of absence. So all of that kind of falls within the time off then set by ABR.
You know, one thing I think in just medical training, just from being a med student on rotations, even after that, you know, there's a lot of emphasis to always, you know, show up and go to clinic regardless of, you know, you're feeling sick or down or something happening. And it's nice to see that, I guess, they define, you know, more of an ample time to take leave. But do you feel like residents, this allays some of the fear that residents have that, that maybe they can take leave and they're still able to graduate on time?
I know Dr. Masters is a program director. Maybe she can, you know, speak a little bit.
Sure. And, yeah, I did take leave as a resident. I had my daughter when I was PGY 3. So I did take leave, but I took a really short leave. probably way shorter than I should have, partially because I didn't feel comfortable knowing whether or not my training would be extended. So hopefully this gives people a lot of, you know, comfort knowing that if they are gone even for the full 12 weeks of giving birth to two children during residency, they could still, as long as they're meeting their competencies, still sit for their board exams on time and still graduate on time. Now, the number of months that you're required to have completed for your different stages of board exams has been gradually decreasing over time. I used to have to have specifically like 36 months of training to take rad bio and physics. But now there's a lot more flexibility getting to break those up over 2 years, which I think is really helpful for a lot of people too. So I think that has been a very positive change and something that I'm very thankful to have available to our trainees, that I know that I don't have to say someone can't take their boards if they're have to be sick or have surgery or something, and they're a month off.
Right.
Still sit for their boards.
Is that leave paid, unpaid, and does that eat into their vacation or sick time? I mean, I just remember when, there was one moment during my intern year where I was like, I was sick. I was like throwing up, but I had to go in because if I didn't, then, well, there goes my, you know, my vacation.
A lot of variation between different programs, I think, as to whether have like dedicated vacation that's separate from sick time. And some of those are set by the like different specialty programs, like our radiation oncology department has certain policies, but the GMB office for each institution also has policies depending on who pays you.
I think this is where we'll see the most heterogeneity with these policies are implemented, because it's true, it's not necessarily always the radiation oncology department, it's often the institution or GME, which sets forth guidelines for all residents at a specific program. The ACGME essentially states that 6 weeks must be financially supported, but the source of the funding is the key, right? So whether that's admin or GME, you know, setting forth that financial support, if they're able to do so, which is going to vary with, you know, resources, some programs might choose to supplement with paid time off or sick, you know, sick time off, which they do specify that 1 week needs to be maintained outside of that 6 week stretch for vacation or PTO. So there is a slight, you know, acknowledgement that residents do still need time outside of, you know, that leave time. But I think it is a really important question, just in even the era of COVID, where so many of us, if you test positive for COVID, there's an institutional policy often in place that you have to be out 5 days or 10 days or until you test negative. And when you start to consider funding for funding for parental leave, when you think about it in the era of COVID, not everything works out perfectly, right? Because you might have another time you get sick that year. So it's a really important topic, and one that will be interesting to see how institutions choose to support that leave.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't think about the finances part of it at all.
Yeah.
A lot of residency spots are going to be funded federally. And so there are requirements as to what length of time you could be not present seeing patients during that time period. Like our GME office has specific requirements for how many elective months in a row you can do, requirements for who pays for what to help maintain that funding source for trainings.
Interesting.
I think it just underlines the importance of advocating for residents and programs really to have the support they really need to support the true cost of residency training. Because I think all of these things are important to being a well-rounded physician, supporting your training, supporting work-life balance. And fundamentally, it's a need, not a want, when you have 50% of trainees that start families during the course of residency.
Right.
So we need to kind of advocate at all levels to make sure that there's adequate support.
Right. So talking about pregnancy and childcare, because that's a very good reason why some residents may decide to go on family leave. I think like talking about, say, 8 weeks at a time that you can take over a period. Do you think this helps improve some of this family planning issues for residents?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing first that's important to highlight is that the policies do have flexibility for better or worse in terms of the time, the source of funding, coverage across institutions. So even when we talk about timing, really trainees can expect 6 weeks, but what they take in actuality with the flexibility could be 12 weeks. So I think, you know, kind of anything in that range could be realistic depending on what your situation is and what you kind of work out with your individual program. A lot of that might be limited by things like financial support, but to just kind of address that first, because I know, you know, it's kind of like, what do you take? Do you take 6 weeks? Do you take 8 weeks? Do you have to kind of abide by those policies as written? And I think there is flexibility, and that's important because everybody's situation is going to vary. And then I think secondly, you talked about an important thing, which is maintaining diverse workforce in radiation oncology. So there's been some really excellent papers looking at recruitment of women and gender minorities to medicine at large, as well as within radiation oncology. And we see, even though women make up, you know, roughly 50% of physicians nationwide, we still see this gender gap within radiation oncology, where women represent really only about a third of radiation oncologists nationally. And when we look up kind of the track in terms of academics in specific, we see less and less women and gender minorities at leadership levels across our field. So really, policies that are supporting well-rounded training are, the hope is, creating an inclusive environment that allows gender minorities and women to achieve success across all levels of training and within radiation oncology and retain that workforce too, right?
Yes. And I think too, like having policies in place like this specifically for residents and trainees also lends additional support for faculty and staff to be able to access similar time for a leave in some of the historically less flexible environments.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So thanks for clarifying the structure of it, because I think an example that we had was in one of Anisha's friends, like when they had their first kid and they had like 10 days. So how does this play into like paternity leave? Because a lot of work has been done on even getting, you know, our female oncologists to be able to have adequate time after they have a kid. But right behind that is also like paternity leave and also kind of like the way it is viewed, you know, a guy taking a paternity leave after their wife who is not an oncologist, and maybe tie that to also like the LGBTQ because they're not in a heterosexual kind of like relationships. So how does that play into all of this?
I think it's important to consider as much as you possibly can in development of policies, all different shapes and sizes and varieties of families, because you're feeling so many different people depending on your interpersonal relationships that we shouldn't assume that it's going to be a heterosexual one-to-one pairing with a birth parent that's present. You should have family leave policies for adopting parents, for same-sex couples, for foster parents. You know, when a new family comes into your life, they don't just sit down and do exactly what they're supposed to and incorporate themselves into your family without effort.
Yeah, I think by really supporting non-birthing parents, we're uplifting all groups that are affected by this policy. As Dr. Masters so eloquently said, it's really not a binary issue when we see families look very, very different. You can add to your family in many ways, and everybody needs support during training. It's, birthing parents, of course, face unique challenges, medical challenges associated with childbirth, but everyone can benefit from these policies. And it's really wonderful to see the policies be so inclusive to support all trainees.
Right. So just to kind of clarify, do these policies cover stuff like doctor appointments? Because, the kid still has like pediatric follow-ups, right? And having time, even when you're showing up to work, like breast pumping, for example, right? Like, is there like, are these policies like addressing some of this issue? Because I don't think that a lot of hospitals have like breast pumping stations for like mothers to do what they need to do.
So OSHA requirements state that you are required to have a non-restroom private area to pump with however you define it, reasonable access to refrigeration and most hospitals have a specific policy as to how often it's mandated that you are allowed time to do so. But I think a lot of times too, like it leaves out the part that, you're going to need to do this when they're a newborn every couple hours around the clock for weeks. It's not easy. And so I think having very clear communication of expectations with if you're a person that name the pumping or the person that's, may not be able to find their resident because they're pumping. You have to be understanding that that's going to take us some extra time and effort, but the benefit in terms of that child's health and for maternal health is huge. There are legal requirements.
That's good to know.
And I can talk a little bit about the doctor's appointment aspect. I actually am expecting our first child in June. So these past few weeks and months have been filled with a lot of doctor's appointments for me. And it's very exciting, but it's been, kind of an experience to navigate in terms of, I'm very lucky. I've had incredibly supportive attendings and an incredibly supportive department who's really allowed me flexibility and clear communication about attending the visits that I need for my medical appointments. But the specific leave of absence policies, to the best of my knowledge, don't necessarily cover those doctor's visits leading up to birth. But I do believe that there are kind of guidance within ACGME to allow residents to attend just medical appointments in general during their training, as long as there's clear communication with program leadership. And I think the biggest thing, anecdotally from my own experience, is just being clear and upfront with, you know, when your appointments are scheduled, knowing that those aren't always after hours, right? Like doctors work, we know doctors work because we're doctors. And it's during the meantime, just communicating with your attendings and being able to have that transparency, I think, is the most important.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, thank Claire.
Thanks, guys.
Some programs too have like tried to implement, you know, a monthly either wellness day or afternoon where you can schedule appointments. And I think theoretically that sounds really nice, but what if your doctor isn't free then, or your kid gets sick and you need a different day? You know, I think having good communication with the people that you work with is very important in terms of coverage. And there's kind of a balance of like trying to work within the framework of, you know, if you know that you're not going to be specifically in clinic in a morning, like put the appointments in if you can. So that the majority of the time there's a give and take and there's a balance to that. And that you're both like supporting both ends of that spectrum. You can support your department, your patients, and one another such that it seems like an easy to accomplish process, even though a lot of work goes into it.
So Dr. Masters, you know, your program director, and so I'm curious in the perspective of if I was, you know, a med student, you know, let's say I'm applying to programs, I'm trying to family plan, or maybe I have a sick family member, potentially I would have to take leave for, how can students even find out the policies of specific programs, right? We talked about program flexibility, the requirement that ACGME has, but programs can kind of have a range of leave time. Is this something that programs have to be transparent about, publish anywhere, or can someone just ask the program director like yourself about that?
Yeah, I think there are varied ways to do that and varied ways to ask about it. So like the timing of when you ask about, you know, certain things, like people are not going to want to meet you in 5 minutes and say like, hey, when's the first day I can take vacation? You know, that's not, not a vacation type policy, but I think there's always that kind of like give and take and that concern about it. We cannot during the interview process at any time point ask any preferences related to family planning, geographic preference, anything that could be discriminatory or would allow us to categorize you in any way related to that. We cannot ask and should not ask. The interview process is supposed to be an open opportunity for you to learn about us to learn about you and your fitness for the program, not, you know, oh man, like I know, I remember hating like questions like, oh, well, are you gonna have children? Like you can't ask. I'm a pretty open person in general. So I will often volunteer information about myself, about my work-life balance, about what some of the give and take is that we have in our own department. And I think learning about the leadership and how the culture affects the way that families interact, the people with or without families or with your family, be your dog, for all I care, you know, like everybody's a little different. We have a really supportive chair. Who has four children. I have a child. Our associate PD has three, and we have residents with children who still make a way to balance that life and to balance their clinical responsibilities in a way that is accomplishable. So I think you can look at the examples around you and look at how that's implemented. And sometimes that's more helpful even than, well, there's a policy, whether or not you feel comfortable talking to people about taking advantage of some of those may be a different question, but I think we also try to do like a monthly wellness check-in with our residents, just in general related to like mental health, like physician wellness, and just give them the opportunity to have a set time to talk to us.
Gotcha. So for me, I guess if I'm an applicant and I'm applying, I don't know if there is any time, you know, even if you give me 10 hours with the program, I don't think it would naturally come to me to ask. And I think a lot of applicants would probably feel the same way because they're worried about how they will be perceived about like, you know, oh, you interview and you're thinking about what the policy is on sick leave or family leave, right? So do you think this is something that the onus has to be more on the program to actually give that information out versus leaving it for applicants to actually ask? Because I feel like there's that fear, and I would never ask that question.
It's tough.
Like, I remember asking questions, but I asked like questions of the residents of this nature. Like, you know, I didn't necessarily ask when I was interviewing, you know, however many years ago. About, you know, are you allowed to take a leave? I asked more questions like, you know, what's kind of the makeup of the residents within the program? You know, has anyone had issues related to, you know, family leave or balancing clinical responsibilities? And then I kind of just give information openly more so than like waiting for them to ask questions about that. And I think too, like for me at least, like being able to work with people in Soro, like Claire and the many talented people that are really working towards making these policies more visible, I think allows us as a program too to be some of the people that start those conversations that make it a more normalized kind of process.
And I can add a little bit, at least from a medical student perspective, having gone through it so recently myself just a few years ago. We actually were talking about this in the resident room at our program and within Sparrow as well, and it inspired us to send out a survey. It would have been last year now to the recent radiation oncology applicants. So we surveyed both program directors and M4 students who had applied to radiation oncology and asked exactly about this. Like, how comfortable would you feel asking these questions during your interviews?
Right.
What ways do you really want to see this information presented? Because we sent the survey around the time these policy changes had been announced. And unsurprisingly, many of the M4 students echoed exactly what you're saying, that give me 10 hours in a room with a program director and this will never come up just because I don't necessarily feel comfortable. And many of them actually suggested formats like including a slide in the PowerPoint, for instance, when you're going through benefits about what the specific department's parental leave policy is, or including like a little handout, or even technically through ACGME, the policy should be accessible to the applicants within their contracts when they receive that from the program or on the AC or on their GME website. But I think, you know, I really liked that some of the respondents suggested that having like a little handout or a PDF, because I think that's so easy to spark that conversation with the residents, like in the wrap-up session. Like Dr. Master said, we might be a more approachable group in comparison with some of the leadership within programs.
Yeah, right, that's too, because I think too, like we send like a big packet of stuff and it would be a lot easier if we can step into like a slide that you're like...
So going back to like, you know, being more inclusive about what kind of like scenarios or life events that are included in some of this policy. So I'm thinking of people with disabilities, who they're not necessarily have an illness per se, but they have some kind of disability, like even chronic illness, or say someone who has chronic depression and they have prayers of like, you know, real severe depression that may require that they take some time off. Or how did all these scenarios tie into this? Because I think the general thing is to think about, you know, when you're pregnant and let's say when you have a family member that's sick, right?
I think that there's a lot of flexibility from the policies to support many different reasons for leave, as you allude to. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes all of these things happen at once. Right? You might have a child during your PGY3 year and then have a major medical event or even a caregiver, you know, requirement come up later in your training. And I think the flexibility in these policies to not only take leave specific to parental leave, but for any reason that you need to kind of attend to your family or your personal wellness is important and included within the policy. So a really important point of emphasis, and good that you guys acknowledge it and kind of bring it up, because life happens sometimes and residency is stressful enough as it is. So having policies that support all scenarios that could come up is really important.
Yeah. And I have a, I guess a follow-up to that. So when it comes to disclosure, so let's say you know, I figure out that there's a reason why I want to take medical leave. How much of that do I have to actually disclose to like a program director or like to my fellow resident or the attendant that I was supposed to work with? It doesn't seem quite enough to just have the policy, but also how do I take it without feeling some kind of backlash because I didn't tell everybody that I had this illness?
I think like from the perspective of a program director, like that's part of my job is if I see someone that's struggling or if someone brings a well-being, a mental health, you know, some kind of issue that, you can't physically see necessarily, but they need to be able to take time off or take leave or, you know, they need to have a prolonged leave of absence, whatever. Part of that communication with me, hopefully, is that I help to, them to negotiate that. So whatever service they're on, that's just an understanding that that's going to happen and that's what needs to happen. And as the PD, that's my job. I think it's very refreshing to see in the state of Kentucky recently that they passed legislation that you would not have to disclose if you did a physician wellness or mental health sort of you know, program for physician wellness. It would not have to be disclosed licensure or for credentialing, which I think is a huge barrier to a lot of mental health leave right now. Is right now you get hospital credentialing and it says, is there any reason that you could not perform your job or anything that would, you know, prevent you from being able to adequately do X, Y, or C? And for historically, some people, it's been felt that that would be something that you would have to disclose, having to take a leave of absence for that reason. But I'm hoping that more states will have similar policies over time. Other places already do, but to see it in Kentucky was pretty encouraging.
That's great to hear. You know, it seems like overall the policies have definitely improved, you know, taking into account, you know, basically life, the things that happens with life, you know, in any situations, family planning, mental health, medical leave. But what would you say based on what you both looked into, what are the current opportunities for improvement with the policies?
You know, it's a really great question. I think opportunities for improvement and kind of increasing support across the field. I think one of the things we talked about today is just the heterogeneity in implementation of the policies. And I think there's a lot of flexibility, which can be for good because it allows programs to really meet the needs specific to their trainees. But I do think that there's opportunity for clarification in some cases, you know, regarding specific questions like you brought up of financial support, of how it chimes into milestones to meet eligibility for residency program requirements set forth by ACGME, you know, time-based versus competency-based requirements. I think this is such a monumental improvement upon the historical policies that have been in place and should absolutely be celebrated. But I think really this serves as an opportunity for us to all get the ball rolling, keep these conversations going and keep, you know, moving in the right direction to support a really diverse workforce in radiation oncology and retain it importantly.
I think COVID really brought to the forefront some of the policies that were not very inclusive, potentially unintentionally, towards family planning, because that was the year that they kept rescheduling the oral boards, which were given once per year, only in one specific location. And so we realized that numerous women across the country had planned their family and their pregnancies and their aftercare around having to be in Arizona on one specific day. And so that lack of flexibility and the lack of ability to have time to pump, to have time to breastfeed your child if you needed to breastfeed, really highlighted some of those inflexibilities that really needed to have an avenue to change because it affects so much of your professional development to be board certified.
Right.
There's still some room for improvement.
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much. As people that are involved in policy, is there any particular policies that are on you guys' docket that you're discussing and trying to maybe push forward out there? Maybe you can give us a preview of that. If there isn't anything, no pressure. Or if it's a secret, you don't have to tell us either.
That's too funny. Well, no, we're welcoming our new executive committee for SWARO this month, actually. So we're really excited to welcome some new leaders and some new faces and gender equity across our field. As far as our goals and priorities within SWARO as an organization, you know, we continue to support efforts to increase, you know, gender equity and representation in radiation oncology. So nothing in specific, I think, you know, spoilers for the upcoming year, but always some exciting things that we're planning. You know, parental leave, family leave, medical leave, all of this will continue to remain a priority for our organization.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Potential too, and you know, the way that it's gone from being an organization specifically for women to include gender minorities, to include physicists, to include membership worldwide. And so in terms of policies, having representation from outside of the U.S. has been really eye-opening for me, just because we're so far behind what a lot of the international standards are for parental. We're in the dark ages. And so to talk about it, to be able to start to have policies in a country that spends so much money on healthcare, you know, it's something that we have a long way to go in terms of supporting healthy families of all different varieties.
So thank you. So if someone wanted to reach out to you guys, since you guys are in the know about SWARO and the cool people that help with pushing policies ahead, how can they reach out to you guys and get in touch?
We have a really wonderful website. If you haven't checked it out, highly encourage it. You can search Society for Women in Radiation Oncology, and it should be one of the top hits. I also appreciate you kind of bringing up future resources, because not only SWARO is working to advance these important issues, but this month, importantly, the Red Journal is publishing a special edition on diversity and gender equity. So that's a great resource to see the work of a lot of great leaders in this space. I think the Aerogram for this month also recently highlighted a new ASTRO committee that's being co-chaired by Dr. Reshma Jagsby, Dr. Krishna Howell, and Dr. I think Krista Suggs, to address and further family caregiving, mentorship, gender equity within radiation oncology. So really so many different groups within radiation oncology are coming together, from ASTRO to SWARO to Aero, all of which you know, kind of look around, you will find mentors and people to get involved with.
And also ASTRO and your various political action committees, you know, really lobbying for legislation at a state and national level is advantageous for all of us also. It's not something that I ever thought about as a medical student or as an early resident either, but it really impacts so much of the resources that we have access to in terms of lobbying for ourselves, for our patients, for all varieties of healthy families. You can find me too on Twitter or via email. It's just adriana.masters@louisville.edu.
Great. We'll put that in our show notes.
Similarly, I can provide my email address, and I'm on Twitter as well. So feel free to embask it. We can connect.
Nice. So our last question, I guess we ask everyone, what do you guys do for fun? And maybe you can share a book or a movie or a TV show that you're currently watching.
Oh, this is great. I love to read. I'm like a giant book nerd. I just finished, I'm kind of like a fantasy book nerd. So I like Brandon Sanderson. Oh, yeah. He's one of my favorite authors.
Oh, he's great. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
He's so good, right? So I just finished Death in the Emerald Sea, and I'm having a little bit of a fantasy palate cleanser, and I'm going to read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo next. But then movie-wise, I just saw Air by the Ben Affleck movie about Michael Jordan the Air Jordan. So that was
okay.
Yeah, this is how I usually spend most of my time as my family. So my last movie was Super Mario, which is pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for coming. And hopefully, you know, in the future, we can have you guys come on to have more dialogues about policy in, like, you know, residency and radiation oncology at large.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much for supporting our work and for supporting Swaro. It's been really fun.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, listeners, thank you for tuning in to Tumor Board this week. We hope that you took something away from this episode. And if you like what we're doing, please rate us 5 stars and like this episode. You can also follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and any other platform that you get your podcast from.
We hope by now you realize our goal is creating a platform for under-discussed topics in medicine. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you want us to talk about, you can reach out to us via email or Twitter. Our handle is @TumorBoard. Thank you.